Hello and welcome back to Invisible Illnesses, episode 2. I'm Steve Ward-Booth. I'm a GP with a special interest in functional disorders. And I'm here with my cousin Alex Ward-Booth, who is hopefully going to do a lot of the talking today because he's going to tell you about his experience of illness. And I think this will give us some real-world understanding of some of the key concepts. But first, the usual disclaimer. Whilst I'm a practicing GP, I haven't assessed you nor any of your symptoms. And so none of the information I can give can ever be specific to you and your situation. And the information given is not a substitute for assessment and guidance from your own doctor. So if you've got any concerns about your health, we'd recommend that you speak to your doctor. Okay, so Alex, you're going to tell us your story today. And I should say that, you know, it's well over 3 years since we had that kind of initial conversation when you were feeling ill. And whilst I can remember the general nature of the problems and the general direction of our conversation, I can't remember the specifics. Of which symptoms you had, nor exactly what I said. So in some ways, us having this conversation again will be the sort of kind of fresh experience. And I will. The other thing is, I've got a bit of a cold at this point, and I might cough a little bit. So I apologise in advance for that. So I'm going to hand over to you, Alex. So take us back to 2021.
Yeah. Okay. So as I say, I'd got tested positive for COVID at the end of August 2021, and then the call we had was in end of September 2021. So it was almost exactly 4 weeks after I'd kind of first tested positive. And I was still, you know, I was in a really kind of bad way because I was expected to be better by that point. You know, it was kind of, and I just wasn't getting any better. So I was still struggling.
Sorry to interrupt you, Alex. Tell us a little bit more about the specifics of the symptoms that you had? You said it was, you know, you were feeling rotten, but what did you have? Did you have pain? Were you tired? What did you have?
Yeah, so it was interesting because it kind of morphed quite a lot over the course. So when I first had tested positive COVID, I had a few days where it was just kind of like a random series of symptoms that just seemed to come and go. So, you know, I would start getting hay fever. I would get very tired. I would feel very, upset stomach at one point. And then it kind of, but one of the sort of common threads that seemed to go through it all the way was this sort of low grade headache, like a kind of hangover, where you just feel like this kind of low grade headache, sort of feeling quite rotten. When we first talked about it, that was where I was kind of, you know, really struggling because it just wouldn't shift. So anytime I would do anything, so if I tried to go back to work again, if I looked at a screen for any kind of period of time, I would get these kind of really painful headaches, to the point where I just couldn't do it anymore. If I tried to exercise, it would feel like, you know, when you have that kind of pulse inside your head feeling, like it was like that, you know, like my head was going to explode. And I would just, you know, have to stop. And yet it was just so frustrating because I just felt like I couldn't do anything. I felt I was just stuck. I couldn't go back to work. I couldn't exercise. I couldn't really do anything around the house because any time I tried to do anything, I would feel really just, yeah, these headaches would just get worse and worse.
So what things around the house, you know, you had your kids quite young back then, weren't they? Probably.
They were at that stage. They were being seven and 10 at that stage. So, they're both boys, so very high energy boys. So, you know, they just work at a certain speed, don't they, kids? And they don't, they kind of, until they're asleep, they operate at the same velocity. Yeah. And that was just trying to keep up with them, trying to do anything with them was just really hard. And obviously they were very much used to me being involved in everything and doing everything because quite active. And so they didn't really understand why I was suddenly like, I can't do that with you now. I can't play, you know, I can't go on the bike with you. I can't kind of run after you. I can't do, you know. So they were sort of confused, and that was making it harder for me to feel like I was, you know,
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just taking you back to the physical symptoms, you headache, sort of throbbing. I think did you say dizzy as well? I think at times.
Yeah, no, I didn't say dizzy, but it was. Yeah, it was. Like so that kind of I would get this kind of lightheaded feeling where I just feel like sort of particularly after kind of exercising, where I would just feel very 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 odd and just have to stop. So.
And what about things like often runs hand in hand, so difficulty concentrating or sort of sometimes people talk about a brain fog. So
actually
memory not quite so good, concentrating, that kind of thing.
That was, yes, that there was definitely that. There was definitely that. So okay. If I did anything for any extended period of time, and I think that was, you know, trying to go back to work, that was one of the things, you know, I mean, I did kind of actually log on to a couple of Teams calls and then someone from my team just went, you know, go away, basically. You're absolutely no use to anyone, because I was kind of on this call, not really being able to concentrate on what people were saying, feeling very lightheaded and dizzy and kind of, you know, and they were just like, look, this is just silly what you're doing, you know. So I kind of got sent sent home from work, even though we're all work at home anyway. That was definitely there, the inability to concentrate on anything, really.
Yeah. And presumably felt tired with this, did you?
No, I didn't actually. It was more of a kind of a restless feeling, actually, is what I remember. That I would just have this kind of constant feeling of I should be doing something. I should be kind of getting on, and I couldn't. And it was just this kind of frustration. To begin with, I was very tired and I was sleeping a lot. And but then after that, by the 4 week time, it was more of a kind of sense of, oh, I just, you know, and it was interesting with the pain. So I was looking, I remember a lot of this stuff. Well, I'm remembering a lot of this stuff because I wrote so much of it down. So I kind of kept quite detailed kind of notes and diary sort of thing about how I was feeling. And one of the kind of bits of my notes was a kind of a table I had of how much paracetamol and ibuprofen I'd had per day, because I was on the maximum dose of everything. So I would, because for me it was like the pain almost became a separate thing. So it was like, if I can just get rid of this pain, then everything will be fine. And it felt very external to me. So the kind of taking the paracetamol, taking the ibuprofen was like, at some point this is going to kind of break through the pain, and then I'll be okay again, and then I can just get on with my life. And it was really, that was really interesting thinking back on it. Because actually some of the things I tried to kind of get rid of the pain, I mean, exercise was one of the things I tried, and the feeling felt like a little bit of a congested head, you know, like a head cold. And I'd had it in the past when I'd gone for a run feeling like I had a head cold and just feeling, or actually having a hangover and going for a run. And it almost felt like it cleared everything. You know, it was like the kind of, you know, the sort of the clouds cleared and it blew, the sun came out. It was that kind of feeling when I exercised, and I was looking for that. So I was kind of, I'd go for a run and I'd even run quite hard, and then it would be worse. And I'd be like back to, you know, not even just square one, back to feeling worse than I did before I went for the run. So kind of
right.
Very okay. Much in this cycle.
So something about a sense of that being, this is being different to any of your other previous experiences.
Yes.
So tell me a bit about how you were feeling. You talked about how you couldn't work, and perhaps by work we might include your job, but we might also include, you know, doing the kids' bedtime and, you know, sorting the kids out and stuff like that. And you couldn't do the stuff that that gives you pleasure and relaxes you. And you used to run with friends and things like that. And you couldn't do those things. How did you feel?
Guilty, in all honesty, was the overriding kind of overriding emotion, actually. I just felt really guilty. I felt like, you know, if I'd had a broken, I was at points I remember thinking this, I wish I had a broken arm or a broken leg or something, so people could look at me and say, you're clearly, you know, not going to be able to do this because it was just, I felt like, so, you know, I was off work, Becky was, my wife was working, so I was doing like school run because I could do the school run. School run's fine, you know, it was actually quite nice. It's, you know, gentle walk to the kind of school and back. But people would be like, oh, you know, how are you feeling? Are you back at work? And I was like, no, I'm, you know, I can't work. I just feel too awful. And you could, I don't know whether they were judging me or whether I was feeling judged, but I definitely felt this kind of sense of being looked up and down and gone, well, what's wrong with you? Don't look ill.
This
you
is,
know?
Yeah, yeah. This is so, so such a common thread that runs through illness, which is about how we view ourselves, but how we view ourselves through the filter of what other people think of us. I hope we'll get on to talk in more detail about this, because I don't want to derail your story now, because it's really important to hear your story. But we are evolved as pack animals, as tribes, and where we, our value to our tribe is something that is hardwired to us, because primal humans couldn't survive on their own. They couldn't hunt mammoths, and they couldn't defend themselves from saber-toothed tigers, and they needed to be part of the tribe. And somebody who wasn't accepted by their tribe was as good as dead. So we are hardwired to be accepted. And when stuff threatens our sense of how others view us, it's a very powerful phenomenon in the bits of our brain that we can't really control. So let's just park that for now, or maybe we'll talk about it a bit more at another time. So you felt guilty, and I suspect you know, and other, there might be other negative things, so not good enough or fragile or a bit weak, or you know, how come everybody else has recovered from this and I haven't, and that kind of stuff. Does that sound right?
So absolutely. And I was just thinking that how come everyone else is better. It was interesting because I picked up COVID. We'd been to a wedding. It was one of those when, you know, when the restrictions were lifted and people did stuff, and a really good friend of ours got married, and there was a whole bunch of us went to this, and obviously because we hadn't been outside for a very long time, everyone's like drunk and on the dance floor and jumping around. So a massive amount of people from that wedding got COVID, and I didn't know him well, but he was another one of the dads that I'd kind of knew from around. So because we both kind of tested positive at the same time, you know, I kind of was texting him and going, oh, how's it going and how's it feeling? And actually his experience was very different from mine. So, you know, I remember him being at the start like, you know, oh, this is nice. I'll get a few days off work. I don't have to deal with the kids very much, you know, and I can just, you know, not in a bad way. He was very relaxed about it. And then he went very quiet. And I was just texting him all the time, how are you doing? You know, you know, and I remember texting him quite a lot, saying, are you testing negative now? Because that was a big thing for me, was once I tested negative, I can get out and go and do stuff outside the house. And he tested negative before me. We were about the same. No, that's a lie. He was about the same. But then once he was like, you know, oh, I'm still feeling a bit tired, but, you know, I'm back at work. And I remember thinking, why is that happening? What's he done? What's happening? And I kind of almost went from texting him a lot to then actually texting him a lot less, because it made me feel worse, because he was fine and I wasn't, and I didn't know why that was.
So let's... So that's something interesting, because there's something you said there, and language is very important. And you talked about this guy as someone whose approach was, I get a bit of time off work, as you know, there's nothing I can do about it, and that's all right. And I'm exaggerating a little bit for effect. Whereas you were someone who was writing spreadsheets of how much paracetamol you were taking, and you were feeling guilty for not being at work, and you were recording, I think, some symptoms. You'd written some of them down, I think. And do you think, looking back, that you and your friend might have slightly different personalities, slightly different, you know, approaches to, you know, your sense of duty in the workplace and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think exactly that. I think exactly that. Yes. I mean, basically, I was, you know, I think I very much kind of define myself as being someone who's like you know, I'm kind of busy. That's my thing. I'm always doing stuff. You know, I'm always kind of, something's always happening. You know, I don't kind of let people down. I don't kind of shift, you know, I don't drop my responsibilities. Whether someone outside, you know, other than me would think that, it's obviously another thing. But that was how I like to see myself.
And we're not necessarily saying that your mate is a sort of lazy good for nothing who doesn't give a monkeys about his work colleagues. We're absolutely not saying that. But what I am hinting at here is that there are a range of personalities. What we mean by personality is the sort of the ways that we think about and kind of behave in the world, in a sort of the instinctive ways that we think about ourselves and where we fit into the world and what we do about it and how we act. And these are, part of it is stuff you're born with, and it's genetic, and part of it is stuff you learn, and lots of it's learnt very early on in life. And one of the things I would point out that is really important, and if we talk about if people with much more severe and ingrained functional disorders, because I think it's really important to recognise that this was a pretty awful time for you, but in the scheme of functional disorders that I see, you recovered very quickly and got back to, you know, your very high level of functioning again. And I think I want to make a point that what's really useful about your story is that it illustrates, you know, my belief that functional disorders are a big spectrum, all the way from people who are really healthy, high functioning people who might get some symptoms that are not well explained by the biomedical model, and they may suffer to greater or lesser degrees with them, and they may recover, and they range all the way from that, which I think lots and lots of us could identify with, but all the way through to people who are highly, highly disabled, who are using wheelchairs and haven't been able to work for 50 years, and who have, you know, agonizing pain and real agonizing pain, fatigue to a degree they can barely walk, and all sorts of other things. So there's a big spectrum here. When I speak to people who are more significantly and more chronically ill than your experience, talking about something like fibromyalgia syndrome, when using that because it's a slightly more defined term, it is universal that we identify a personality which has a very strong sense of duty and obligation, and a very you might say some of this is coincidental, because these are very common personality traits, and nobody would see themselves as not having those traits. But it's a degree, it's a spectrum, and you will often find that there are people who are, who've given up all of their kind of leisure for themselves. And don't do anything, but they're still acting as a carer for a next door neighbour, and they're still working in a very difficult job a lot of hours a week. And this sense that they cannot stop doing this stuff for other people is driven by a really strong sense of guilt or fear of not being good enough or not being accepted in some way. And it is part of it's certainly an association, and probably drives elements of the illness for a variety of reasons that, again, we can talk about in a lot more detail. But, I just wonder whether you've reflected much on, particularly if we went and talked a little bit more about that sort of recording of notes that you did and the spreadsheet and the timing. You know, why did I think you rang me sort of dead on 4 weeks, which suggests that was a kind of a point at which, you know, enough was enough and something should be different. Could you reflect a bit more on that, on the notes?
Yeah, I can. I mean, I think where that, I can talk about, I'd have to go back a little bit to talk about where that comes from, though, if that's okay. So before the COVID. So in 2000, I had, I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. So for people who might not know what that is, that's kind of, it's a stomach condition. So I'm sure you'll, you know, describe it better than I can. But it essentially, for me, it was described to me as almost being like a kind of eczema, but in your digestive tract. So when it flares up, so when you're suffering with it, you're not digesting your food properly. So I got that in 2000. At the
can
time,
can I just add, it's a pretty severe disease. You know, and I know there's a spectrum of that, but there are a significant number of people with ulcerative colitis who end up having surgery and needing their entire colon removed, maybe needing a stoma bag. Some people can get good medical management with medication, but some people it's much more complicated and difficult than that. So it's a pretty important and pretty severe disease.
It's definitely not a picnic. Don't recommend it to anyone else. And as you say, you know, there are people who I know, certainly, you know, from, you know, being part of the kind of various, you know, colitis groups. That, I mean, you know, you hear about people who have a really, really tough time with it. So at the time I was diagnosed with it, I had a really poor diet and kind of rage. I was living in Germany. I was having a great time, but there was a lot of kind of extensive sampling of German lagers going on. Diet was pretty kind of mixed, and I wasn't looking after myself. And I don't know if this resonates with people, but this was kind of at the stage in my kind of early 20s, post uni. Your body feels a bit like a kind of a production line at that point. You put stuff in, your body deals with it, comes out the other side, and you're fine a few days later. And that was very much how I behaved, you know.
Beer and sausages,
exactly. The first case scenario. So I was, you know, that was a bit of a wake-up call for me, getting colitis. And the way I approached it was, you know, in a very structured, organised way. So I read everything I could about it. Because my thing was, okay, you know, I've got this thing. It's, you know, I wished I had a more glamorous disease. Anyone who has kind of digestive problem, it's not, you know, it's not something that kind of is a glorious struggle by any stretch of imagination. So, you know, that I was like, I don't want to be a victim of this thing. I want to kind of deal with it. And so, you know, there was the medication I got from the doctors out in Germany, which seemed to kind of actually deal with the immediate information quite well. But then I looked at, okay, let's read up about it. What are the things I should do with my diet? What should I not do? And I started keeping food diaries, and exercise seemed to help. So I had a very kind of, you know, I remember creating there's a theme here, Steve, a spreadsheet, which was like, here's how I'm exercising. You know, I then set myself goals to kind of do, I entered the London Marathon, and then I had an exercise plan and a kind of, you know, here's where my stomach is. You know, when I've got issues with kind of, you know, flare-ups with the colitis, wasn't flare-ups with colitis, but when I was not feeling great, what was that? And making notes, and what did I eat, and how do I respond? So I had a very structured and organized approach to that, and it worked for me, right? I mean, I was, I then went from having colitis where, you know, touch wood, I don't, I had a bit of a bad experience at Glastonbury a few years later, but other than that, I really have never had any flare-ups since from colitis, you know. And there are other things that go on, but we can talk about that some other time. But it basically, in my mind, I beat this thing, right? And I beat this thing because I informed myself and I was organized. And also, I think what was important was I didn't need to kind of, no one needed to know, right? Like, no one, I told a couple of people that I had it, but it wasn't something I made a big deal of, and I could just carry on doing what I was doing before. I drank a lot less, I ate better, but, you know, other than that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know. And so when I kind of fast forward to what happened with COVID, it was like, okay, you know, right, I've got this thing. It was everywhere. So at the time I was working at for the NHS, so I wasn't frontline, and I think there's some other stuff around that I think is relevant we can talk about in a bit. But, you know, I was kind of working in the kind of, so my job is market research and insights, and so I was in the kind of insights team of a kind of local NHS organization, and so, you know, I could see this stuff was all around me. I was like, inevitably I'm gonna get it. And I was like, what? Well, if this happens, you know, here's how it's going to be. This is how I'm going to manage it. I'm going to be very organized, very methodical, and I'm going to get back to where I was before very quickly. And then because that didn't happen, that was when I got stuck. You know, that was like, okay,
yeah.
So what is this now?
So, I mean, that's really interesting because, you know, what I would say for context, I don't know many people with inflammatory bowel disease who read around the illness and kept food and exercise diaries. I think I do know of some patients who would take that approach, but not, you know, less than half. You know, and we put that in with the spreadsheets and the things. So firstly, there's a thoroughness, there's a sort of commitment and an effort and an engagement, a degree of perfectionism maybe about that, mm-hmm. that is really important to recognise, and that's not universal in people with illness and with symptoms. But one of the things was that we very briefly talked before this podcast about, you mentioned your spreadsheets, and you used the word, you suggested that it was slightly embarrassing that you would talk about, you made a little joke about all your spreadsheets. And I think this is really important as well, because it is really important to recognise that if we're going to say that being a little bit obsessive about some stuff might carry some additional risk factors for functional illness, it's really important to recognise that being organised and setting high standards and planning in advance for things are, in just about every other sphere of life, huge personality strengths that will make you more effective and more efficient in your work and in all sorts of other things in your life. And it's vital for us, you know, if we're thinking about how we worked in tribes, we've got to have a mix of people. And that's why we've evolved all these different personality types. Because if you've got everybody being the kind of laid back, this will sort itself out, don't worry, it'll all be fine, then you end up as the tribe who's got no mammoth meat at the start of December. Equally, if you've got everybody who's obsessing about the fine details of stuff, then it might be difficult to have somebody who takes sort of pragmatic overview decisions about what's best for the tribe and doesn't worry too much about offending this person or that person because it's for the greater good. So you can see how you need those two ends of the personality type spectrum to have a functioning tribe. But one of the things I find is that people often internalize a lot of negative thoughts about about themselves, that they and that's an example of this. And it's really important to recognize your strengths, that certain traits and certain patterns of how we think and how we behave might be unhelpful in certain situations. That's really useful, because then we can try and challenge those and say, actually, am I pushing myself a little bit hard here to be expected that there's to be feeling guilty that I'm not ready for work at 4 weeks? You know, is that helpful or an unhelpful thought? It's unhelpful, okay? Because guilt means stress responses, cortisol release, and all the other stuff that we've hinted at in episode one that might change physical symptoms. But it's important to recognise that it might be unhelpful in this situation, but we also mustn't beat ourselves up too much, because there's a huge amount of other elements of our lives where these things are helpful. And you've illustrated that in a slightly unusual setting, and you've said, actually, my learnt experience was that being thorough, being organised, reading around the topic, and actually treating my bowel a bit like a car... You know, we talked in episode one, is a predictable thing. If I do these things, my car will be fixed. My bowel will behave better. And it did. And so you reinforced that. And so your learned experience was that next time I get ill, and you know, this is another thing, you were already prepared for what was going to happen when you got COVID. And I would say a lot of people would not be that kind of organized or even thought about, you know, what's going to happen when they get COVID. A lot of people will. So there'll be people listening to this who identify completely with you thinking about, you know, what's going to happen when I get COVID. And there'll be other people thinking, God, I didn't really think about that until it happened. And those are, you know, normal, you know, part of the normal spectrum of illness. So that really, you know, that backstory really tells us a lot, you know, about you as a person, your strong sense of duty and obligation, which goes some way to explaining very high stress levels that must have been evolving from not being able to do your duties as an employee and a work colleague to pull your weight, and as a dad and a husband, and that's poking you in places of your subconscious which are really, really hardwired and very potent causes of stress. And that backstory, it explains all that. It all becomes, you know, there's nothing mysterious about that anymore. There's nothing illogical. We don't have any difficulty following how you ended up feeling the way you felt in that situation.
No, and I think what's interesting is, I mean, there's two things I'd wanted to say from that. One is that, you know, that it's being kind of aware of it. You know, mindfulness is kind of one of those words that kind of means a lot more to me now than it did, you know, sort of, you know, 5-6 years ago. And it's being mindful of actually kind of where, what those thoughts are and what those feelings are and where they've come from. So if I think about actually just, you know, very current thing that's happening even, you know, very recently. So, you know, when we were setting up this call, I was running late. You know, I was trying to get the kids out of the house, and I knew we had this call, and I'd already texted you to say I'm going to be 15 minutes late, and then I was going to be even later than that. And actually, I started getting the same kind of background headache going on. And then it kind of, there's this other voice came in my head, was like, okay, look, Stevie, right? You know, he's going to understand. It's fine. You know, just, and it was like, you know, took a breath, took a moment, and actually, you know, it's recognizing that you know, that's happening, what's going on, what one of our inner voices is telling you, that there's another inner voice that can tell you something else, and how that's impacting you and what you can do about it. It was a real change. And I got a lot of that from the conversation with you, because I remember you saying to me at one point, you probably don't remember this, but you know, I talked about having, I went for a run, and it wasn't a very good run, it was like, it was a bit rubbish, and I felt terrible. And you were like, well, hang on a minute, you know, why are you criticizing yourself about having tried to do something that you thought might make you better? So I think there's, you know, I think there's probably another episode we can do around that exact conversation, but it was just interesting really thinking about it in that way.
I think you've fleshed that out beautifully, and I think there's so much more that I think that you can, your case illustrates here, that's applicable to lots of illnesses like this and how they present, both, you know, similar severities, but also we can see how the much more severe illnesses develop from this. And you've mentioned mindfulness there, which is very much a kind of moving into solutions, and I know that that's something you've found helpful. It's not everybody's solution, but something you found helpful. But that has really come out of, you wouldn't have been able to use that without a good understanding of what was driving your illness. And I think, you know, the way you've talked about this illness, I got to thank you for your honesty and the clarity with which you've talked about it, because it's really helped, in my view, flesh out a really important set of drivers for illness that I see over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. And there's a number of other threads that you've hinted at, which I'd like to explore a little bit further, which I think will further help understanding. So I wonder if we should draw to a little close now. Is that all right? And I'll give you a little summary of what we've covered.
No, sure, that works. That's perfect. Yeah.
So I think the kind of three takeouts from today are something about our identity, how we view ourselves and how we fit into the world around us, the people around us. Is important, and that's something that's hardwired into us from our sort of prehistoric history. And the second is that allows us, it's one of the things that allows us to understand that there might be drivers for our illness that have hitherto gone unrecognized. And by understanding that, that is the key that might unlock some opportunities for change which materially improve symptoms of all kinds.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think it's that sense of where there's roles you have in your mind that, like, this is the role I play. You know, I'm the person who works, I'm a runner, I'm, you know, an active dad. And when those roles start to then put pressure on you, how that can result in, you know, feeling more unwell when you're not able to fulfill those roles. I think that was really important in my story personally.
Well, I think we are pretty much out of time, unfortunately, Alex, but thanks so much for that. I think it's been really helpful to bring some life and reality to this issue. How did it feel talking about it?
It was all right, actually. It felt pretty good sort of talking about it and kind of, yeah, I guess, reflecting on that time in my life, you know, with you, and putting it all into perspective, really. And I think,
you know, one of the things that I've realized in talking to you about it is, although that felt like forever, that was kind of potentially a relatively short period of time compared to, I guess, some of the other people who will experience some of these symptoms. So I think in our next episode, we've got a guest lined up, Kieran, whose story is much more around that kind of having experienced those health issues over a number of years and actually even still struggling with them today. So I think that'll be a really helpful additional patient story to sort of tell, to kind of help us explore that in a bit more detail and talk about that further. So yeah, I think that'll probably be a natural link into that story.
Yeah, that sounds a great next step. So great. Well, I look forward to that and look forward to seeing you and speaking to you next time, Alex.
Brilliant. Speak to you next time. Cheers, Steve. Cheers, everyone.
Bye-bye.